Greetings, humans. You have entered the Command Zone, your destination for all aspects of Elder Dragon Highlander. Enjoy your stay.
Amazing grace, how sweet the sound that saved a wretch like me. I once was lost, but now am found. Was blind, but now I see.
We found it at the end there again.
And you are seeing / listening to the Command Zone podcast. Just classic renditions of your favorite tunes. We should make like one of those now. That's what I'm talking about.
No, music. We should not do that. Make people's ears bleed.
I'm your host, Jimmy Wong.
How's it? It's Josh Lee Kwai.
We're joined today by a very special guest.
With the amazing.
Amazing. Amaz.
Hi, guys. How's it going?
You didn't join us in the song. Why is that?
You guys have great singing voices.
Wow. The first person to ever say that.
Really? I thought you guys sing every episode.
Yeah, we do.
And no one has ever complimented you guys?
It's like 90.
No, they really haven't.
It's like 90-10 anger/compliment.
All right.
Yeah, but you know.
I liked it.
If they're laughing, I want to be laughing along with them.
That's right.
Amaz is in Los Angeles today visiting. So we are going to be talking about, well, your amazing career so far. And especially because you are someone that's managed to bridge the worlds between Magic and Hearthstone and make waves in both of those communities, as well as, you know, these are two of the biggest card games in the world. Mm-hmm. So we have a lot of lessons that we can learn from games like Hearthstone. I want to know your opinions and your ideas, as well as how we can apply it to Magic and potentially even vice versa.
Oh, yeah. Let's dive right down to it.
Right. All right. Before we get into all that, though, we got to talk about our sponsors. If you go to cardkingdom.com/commandzone and use that affiliate link when you're ordering your Magic cards, singles, products, anything at all, you really are supporting this show. You're supporting game nights. You're supporting all of our content. And also, while you're there, any cards you pick up, you want to protect them. You want to play them onto a nice, pristine playmat so they don't get all dirty or scuffed up. Ultra Pro is our other sponsor, and they're going to help you protect all your cards. They have awesome, cool dice. They have relic tokens, which spice up your battlefield and make it look all fancy. Mm-hmm. So buy Ultra Pro products and also supports the show.
And the final way to support the show is directly at patreon.com/commandzone. We do one lucky thing, or we only one special thing for one lucky person every episode, and we shout them out. Amaz, you can join us on this one.
Okay.
So this episode is dedicated
to
Colzy Knight.
Colzy.
A real knight.
A real knight.
Wow.
You cool rock.
Name.
Yeah.
You rock. Yeah, yeah, very cool.
You definitely
name.
Rock.
All right.
Yeah.
Let's dive right in. So, Hearthstone versus Magic, which is better? No, actually, that's not what we're talking about today.
Magic.
All right, I'll name one and that's it.
That's the episode. That's the deciding vote. We're not here to disparage either of the games, but rather we're going to talk about key similarities and differences between the two, as well as the lessons we can learn when comparing them. So, let's just talk about the similarities at first.
Okay.
They both are games where you draw creatures and spells. You're trying to get your opponent's life total down to zero, and you have a replenishing resource pool. Now, how does the resources work in Hearthstone?
Yeah, at the core, it's very similar to Magic. There's a big difference. You don't put lands in your deck.
Mm-hmm.
Instead, every turn, you gain a mana automatically. And at 10 mana, you stop gaining mana. So, you know, in Magic, you can play more than 10 lands.
Right.
But in Hearthstone, you're limited to 10. And once you kind of ramp it to that point, you just kind of stop and just every turn you have 10 mana to play your stuff.
But in Magic, you can also miss land drops, which can't happen in Hearthstone.
That is true.
Right?
And in Magic, I find it very rare that you have 10 mana at the end of the game.
It's true. You almost always miss land drops by, you know, well, you're a limited player. In Commander, we're going to hit 10 land drops more often. But
we want to hit 10.
But what you're saying is, yeah, how does that change the game when you think, you know, when you sort of think about it in terms of strategy? Like, you're guaranteed to get, like,
you know, you can play that 4-drop next turn because you have 3 gems this turn and you're going to get another mana next turn kind of thing.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's definitely easier to, you know, play the cards you put in your deck, right? Mm-hmm. For example, in Magic, you probably have like 11 drops and 12 drops, and yeah, those probably don't exist in Hearthstone for a good reason, right?
Right.
But mainly speaking, in Hearthstone, you know you're gonna play your cards a significantly higher percent chance than in Magic, even in limited, right?
Right. If you ever put a 7-drop in your limited deck, there's gonna be some games where you just never can play it, right?
Yeah, something like that. So I'd say that because of this, you know, 10 mana thing in Hearthstone, you actually have to. How do I put this? You have to be very careful of what cards you put in your deck,
right?
I guess, as opposed to in Magic, you pretty much are not going to see half your deck by the turn the game ends.
Mm-hmm.
I guess that's kind of similar in Commander as well, right? You're not going to see half your deck in Commander.
Depends on what your deck is.
You might not even see 30% of it, depending on the deck.
Right, something
like that. Yeah.
Well, now that we have some similarities out of the way, let's talk about the bigger category, which is differences. So there are a lot of differences between these two games. For one, Hearthstone doesn't have instant speed.
Yep.
They have reactionary spells, like if I attack you, something triggers. But in general, you're playing mostly on your own turn, right?
Yeah, that's right. So you learn a lot of key concepts, such as like you need to establish an early tempo. You need to kind of play around every single card your opponent has, but to a certain degree, right? So, for example, your opponent's AOE, you can only play so much into it. You can, you know, you can't just dump your pull board out. You can hold it a little bit back. But then if they don't have the card and you didn't play your card, well, you're just passing your turn doing nothing.
Right.
So, it's a delicate balance.
Yeah, another big thing is that you actually choose who blocks your creatures when you're attacking in Hearthstone, whereas in Magic, you're given the option whether or not you want to block, right?
Right. In Hearthstone, your turn is your turn.
Mm-hmm.
So the attacking player has a huge advantage. A 3-4 can, you know, hit a 3-3, whereas in Magic, if you have a 3-3 and my opponent has a 3-4, my 3-3 can live forever as long as I have life. I can just choose to take the 3 damage.
Right.
Right. Yeah. And
but
you can't.
In Hearthstone, they just, no, I'm just going to kill your 3-3 with my 3-4, and that's it.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
And it does take persistent damage, so the 3-4 will become 3-1, right?
Yeah, exactly.
And then you have to heal it or whatever else, but it does make it easier to kill later on.
Mm-hmm.
And there's no graveyard in Hearthstone. I played a lot of Hearthstone when it first came out, but I forgot about it. You just don't have access to this huge resource, which people consider really important in Magic.
Right. Well, some of these concepts have been added to the game.
Mm-hmm.
So for interaction in Hearthstone, you have secrets.
Right.
So it's kind of like trap cards in Yu-Gi-Oh, I guess.
Yeah.
Where it activates if you do a specific action in your turn. In terms of graveyard, there is technically a graveyard, but all the graveyard interacting cards are randomized. So for example, Priest can bring back a random card from the graveyard.
A random creature.
A random creature, and you don't get to choose. So it takes a lot of death away.
They don't want you to have like a thing where you scroll through and decide, right?
Yeah,
because it just take a long time.
Yeah, exactly, and that's because Hearthstone's philosophy is that the client has to be very clean, right?
Mm-hmm.
The user interface is very nice to look at,
right?
So that there's no you have to click this for the graveyard, you have to click through this to look at your order of your deck or something like that. There's also a hand limit, whereas in Magic there's technically no hand limit until you move to discard.
Right.
Yeah. Oh, interesting. And I'd say one of the most important differences is Hearthstone has hero powers, so based on the class that you're playing. So it's like actually it's kind of similar to Commander.
I was
going to
say that actually makes it more like Commander because you have a thing you've always got access to,
right?
Kind of.
Yeah, that's right.
The priest can heal, or the hunter can shoot them.
Shoot them down a little bit. And of course, Hearthstone has classes, Magic has colors.
Mm-hmm.
And you can't blend a priest and a warlock deck, right? You can't have both. You have to choose one hero and play as that.
Yeah, that's right. There's actually a big difference, right? So, priest would be pretty much the color of white, in a sense. White, blue, and rogue would be very, tempo blaze, removal, black, right? In Magic, you can just mix and match. You can play as many as 5 colors. You can also be a monocolor deck or even a colors deck or whatever. In Hearthstone, you have to choose a class. And once you do that, that's a huge decision because you can only add their classes, the class-specific cards, and then the pool of neutral cards, which is available to everybody.
Every class, right.
Yeah.
Again, a little like Commander in that once you choose your card, it sort of tells you, you can only have these colors.
Right.
Yeah, in that sense, Hearthstone is pretty similar to Commander in that sense.
And there's there's the classless cards, which are kind of like the colorless cards or artifact cards. And then, everything
like your soul
else
rings,
is like, well,
right?
yeah, I'm mono black Commander, so I can only have black cards, so I'm not choosing. Right. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But not, I would say Druid is the one that ramps mana, right? With sort of the giant growth kind of effect.
Yeah, Druid is very green.
Yeah, definitely,
for sure.
But not every color has access to artifact ramp that Commander decks do they?
I think Druid is the only color for ramp.
Interesting.
In Hearthstone, that's right. It's much limited in that sense, right? Green is usually the only color that can ramp in limited.
Right. Okay, well, let's quickly, before we go into the rest of the topic, let's actually break down your history now that we've sort of talked about the key differences between Magic and Hearthstone. So how did you actually find your way onto Hearthstone and onto Twitch? If you guys don't know, Amaz is a pretty popular streamer, and Hearthstone was how you got started, correct?
Yeah, so I first, takes me way back.
This is a long story, sigh.
It's just kind of looking back. It's kind of very interesting, right? So I started World of Warcraft, like most people.
Something we all share here.
Oh man, that was a great game. So I played that for 7 years. Man, it feels like so long ago.
You were like a raid leader and a guild leader.
Yeah. So when I first started, it was my first ever, like, real game, I guess, like the first MMO. Mm-hmm. I started just like walking in circles, you know, learning. What's it called? Learning skinning and leatherworking a warrior. Yeah. Because I was like, oh, I'm so smart. I can craft bags now. I can like zone, like, you know, hunt down monsters for like, you know, 30 more minutes before going back to base and whatever. Yeah.
Min-maxing from the beginning.
Yeah. And then, you know, in my later half of the WoW days, I would be like doing the hardcore stuff, like raid leading, and I'm the guild master, and man, that was like a full-time job that didn't pay any money.
Yeah, guild leader is a...
I asked you about how you assigned, because every time you do like a dungeon or a raid, epic loot drops, and it's bind on pickup, and usually they have systems where if you've done so many raids, you have points that you can spend and bid on.
Dragon
kill points.
And I asked you last night, how did you assign items in your guild?
My guild is... It's kind of like a monarchy kind of thing, but you know, it's kind of all fun. It's kind of like a love thing.
Right.
But,
well, they must have liked you.
They must have trusted you.
Yeah, I guess so. Yeah. Because like I know, like, you know, if you're gonna attend a lot of raids, then you know this is gonna be put into good use, right? Mm-hmm. And it's kind of like a, you know, group trying to solve a problem, anyways. Right. So I don't want it to go wasted, I guess.
Right. So how did you get into Hearthstone then? Because WoW obviously made by Blizzard, right?
Yeah. So Blizzard announced this Hearthstone game. That was kind of like a blend of, you know, card games and Warcraft in general, right? Because Warcraft 3, I love Warcraft 3 as well. And I was like, I need to get this.
Right.
I need to get this game. It's in beta. I need to get a key. So I asked all my friends, all my family, like, you need to sign up for this. But I got a key myself. So it was all right, you know. And then I loaded it up and I was like, yeah, this is really interesting. And I just nonstop played it.
Had you played card games before that? Like, had you played Magic or Yu-Gi-Oh, Pokemon?
Yeah.
Like
so, So I was a big poker guy. Back then, but with card games in general, I was playing Yu-Gi-Oh with all the wrong rules.
That sounds like me too.
And then Pokemon cards, it's just straight collecting. I mean, come on, who doesn't want to collect Pokemon cards?
Right? Yeah, yeah.
So, technically Hearthstone was my first real card game, if you don't count poker, I guess. I got a key, and then I was like, no, this is great. I'm just going to play this, like, forever. That actually made me kind of, like, quit WoW, I guess. I was like, yeah, I'm kind of done with WoW now. Let's do Hearthstone. Wow. And then my friend was like, hey, you playing Hearthstone now? That's really cool. Have you heard of this website called Twitch? And it's a stream. I was like, I have no idea what you're talking about. So then, you know, we looked through some streamers and whatnot, and he's like, hey, you'll be a pretty good streamer. I was like, yeah, I don't know. I'll try it out. Because I'd be playing video games like 10 hours a day anyways, right? So might as well just turn on webcam.
Finally get a job out of it. Yeah.
Oh, no. Maybe make some friends, you know? Like, kind of a, you know, because...
At that point, you weren't thinking, like, you would make any money or anything.
No, I mean, come on, like...
What kind of dream world do we live in, everybody?
Because I told you guys over dinner, right? I was still teaching saxophone.
Yeah.
Because that was my main job.
If we would have had a saxophone at the beginning...
Oh... Amazing Grace on saxophone. Yeah. That would have been potentially the greatest instrumental opening ever for us.
That'd be pretty good.
Okay, anyway, how often were you streaming, like, at the start?
Oh, at the start, it was really, really, my schedule was, like, 2 hours on Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. And that's it. Yeah, so very casual. I thought was, like, I'm not that interesting to, like, look at more than 6 hours a week, really.
Right.
And, I'm just like, okay, let's start with that. And then, you know, things just started going off really, really well because, you know, I play Priest, mainly in Hearthstone, and it was regarded as the worst class in the game because, you know, all the class does is steal other classes' cards and do them, like, a bit worse, right?
It's funny because white's the worst color in Commander.
Yeah.
Anyway, keep going.
I mean, Priest is more white-blue.
Control-y
kind of thing and always reactive. And people would go like, how are you winning with Priest, right? Like, this is not supposed to win. And then back then, Artosis, the StarCraft guy, he was very big into it too, right? And he was playing Warrior. And I would match up against him ladder a lot because we're both really high ranked. And there's not a lot of people in beta, right?
Right.
And I would consistently crush him. It was hilarious because I would steal his Warrior cards and I was still the perfect combo. Like, you know, there's a card that gains 5 armor and then there's a card that deals damage based on your armor, right? Yeah. So if I steal only that card, it wouldn't do anything.
Yeah, to steal both pieces.
Yeah, I would laugh so hard whenever that happens. And then people were like, wow, I'm going to check out your stream. So yeah, I got pretty lucky in the fact that kind of I was in the right place at the right time.
You chose a niche almost.
Yeah, kind of. Because, you know, it just made me happy to play like bad classes. I like underdog cards a lot, mm-hmm. like even in like Magic, right? Mm-hmm.
How long did it take before you know, from the time you started on Twitch and you were only doing 6 hours a week till when you were, that was kind of what you were doing?
I gradually added more days. So I did 5 days a week, mm-hmm. 2 hours, and then it became 3 hours. And then after that, I kind of like, well, this is kind of working out.
Right.
You know, teams are starting picking me up. And then I was like, wow, I'm considered by esports team. I feel so I feel so special. So then I gradually told my students that I'm going to try the streaming thing out and then, you know, going to pursue it full time.
How what was the length of time, do you think, between when you started and when you kind of stopped teaching saxophone and were like, I'm a Twitch streamer?
So there was a period of 6 months when I was streaming and teaching. Uh-huh. And before I actually, you know, just...
That's pretty fast.
Yeah, that is really fast.
Yeah, I guess so. Yeah.
That's cool. And you play Control Priest, is how you describe the archetype to me, right?
Yeah, Control Priest.
And it's, of course, white and blue is known as the control colors in Magic. Yeah. So that would be the best sort of example of that, right?
Oh, man, Control is so much easier in Magic. You have Counterspell? You can counter...
You can stop things from actually happening.
Yeah, I know, yeah.
So when did this eventually lead into Magic the Gathering?
Okay, so after I joined the Hearthstone team... Mm-hmm. We would like, you know, Skype online and just practice for tournaments and just talk about stuff, right? And eventually, I actually visited Texas and we were just practicing in the gaming house or whatever, mm-hmm. right? And then after Hearthstone practice sessions, they would always talk about Magic. And I was like, okay, that's cool. I mean, I kind of want to, you know, get into conversation or whatever, right? So if you guys ever have a chance to, you know, introduce me to the game, then let me know. Yeah. And then they had a spot open. They were like, oh, missing person for Magic. So can you come and join us? Mm-hmm. We really need a person. I was like, okay, sure. I'll just quit my Hearthstone game. I walked downstairs. I remember this. And then I sat under the table. There were 7 other drafters.
Oh, your first thing was like a draft with 8 people?
It was Modern Cube.
That just was your first time playing Magic?
A casual entryway.
Yeah, I still remember my first card. Like, I looked at my pack. First card was Necromancy, and it was the old wording.
Yeah.
So it was like,
so you're just like a million words. What the hell is this game? Compared to Hearthstone.
Yeah. I mean, I was good at Hearthstone, so maybe I've assumed that I could have been fine. But no. I was like, guys.
Yeah, this makes no sense.
I need some help.
So they told me to draft Mono Green. I did that.
Yeah. Oh, okay. They just leave it open for you.
Yeah, at least I did something, like, you know. And then I was like, wow. There's also a moment where my opponent attacked with 2/2 Death Touch.
Yeah.
And 2 creatures. I was like, okay, double block. And then it was like, no effects. I was like, okay, well, okay, your guy dies. And then it's like, well, both your guys die. It's like, wait, that's not how it works in Hearthstone. So that, yeah.
Assigning
like,
damage,
That was a weird one. Yeah.
So obviously a lot of rules, things to get over. And eventually, I mean, if you were listening to this story now and I told you that Amaz played at Pro Tour Kyoto, you probably wouldn't believe me based on that story alone, but you did play at PT Kyoto. How did that all come about? Now, I know we're jumping up pretty far ahead in time here at this point.
Okay, so this would be like, oh man, 2 years?
Yeah, pretty recently.
Something like that? Yeah, well, no, 2 years after that story. Uh-huh. Which is first
so, time. Modern Cube, first experience with Magic ever. Fast forward 2 years and you're at Pro Tour Kyoto.
Yeah.
Quite the story.
Crazy.
That is kind of crazy, I guess. So yeah, I was given an invite, and then back then actually, I don't know if I'm supposed to say this, but Wizards actually invited like multiple people for Pro Tour Kyoto, but I'm the only one who said yes. So then when they announced me, it's like, oh, special invite. It's like, oh shoot, I'm the only one.
Oh yeah.
So,
but I mean, special invites have gone out at most Pro Tours.
Yeah, there's, I heard about
Day 9 has had one before.
Yeah, people don't realize, but there's usually a couple slots that are special invites at every Pro Tour. Yeah.
So I was like, okay, cool. So I'm like, they announced me now. So I was like, okay, let's start looking for a team. And then pretty much nobody wanted me. It's like, who wants to scrub at their team? You know, you're like dead weight or whatever. So I was like, all right, sure. I was like, maybe I'll just practice myself, do my best or whatnot. But then I was very fortunate because Li Shitian, you know, who's
pretty good at Magic.
He's pretty good. And he's in the Hall of Fame now, right? He reached out to me actually on Twitter and was like, hey, I saw you that you got an invite. Do you want to practice with us, right? And I was like, yeah. At that point, I didn't even know who he was. was. I was like, yes.
Anybody that asked that question, you were going to say yes to?
Exactly.
Well, he's also a Hong Kong native, right?
Yeah. He's also not going to just, like, you know, Hong Kong band together kind of
right,
thing.
Right, right.
And then it turned out that his team was really good.
Well, of course, yeah.
Yeah, he's a pro Hall of Famer.
No, it's not just him, but his team.
Yeah.
Like the team that was kind of Asia Pacific team that he made. Dude, those guys are insane.
Yeah.
Yeah. So good. And
I remember this particularly, and this is delving a little off topic, but the public reaction was pretty negative when your special invite got announced, right?
Yeah.
I remember seeing a lot of people very upset that they would give... I mean, for them, it was like, this person's coming from Hearthstone. He's not a Magic player. Why is he getting a special invite? But you've been playing a lot of Magic at that point.
I have, but at the same time, I can still see, like, people can... Some people have... Like, most of the people have played Magic more than me.
Right, of course.
Because I just kind of started. Yeah, I told my friends about this, and my friends were all like, yeah, it's fine. You know, in their words, Magic players complain about everything, you know?
It's true. I was just going to say, the special invite complaining is still going on, not for you now, but for the next round of people.
Yeah,
like,
they're just gonna... So then, but I mean, it still felt kind of bad, right? I mean, obviously.
Right.
It's like, it's happy to me, you know? It's obviously fine if I'm reading news about everybody else, but, you know, it feels kind of demoralizing. But, you know, once I'm in the team house and I'm just playing Magic, and my main goal was just to, you know, do the best I can.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, just like I just need to like not screw up, I guess, if I ever go on camera, right?
Right.
And then the worries kind of started going away because it's more about the game and not about other people. It's more about, you know, playing it.
It's all about the game.
Yeah.
Indeed.
I guess.
And what was the format of Pro Tour Kyoto though?
It was Hour of Devastation.
Ah. So limited?
So it was limited Hour of Devastation, standard. Which was insane set. Huge fan. And then the standard was right before the rotation.
Mm-hmm.
So it was
the biggest it could be.
Oh my God, it was a huge pool.
How'd you do?
I D2'd. So that was cool.
take that, haters. Yeah.
Take that, haters.
And then I remember at a point where day two, I 3-0'd the draft.
Oh. Whoa.
And then I was still in contention. And then Li Shitian wasn't. We joked about it a lot. It was really funny. Yeah. But man, that was a really fun time because that was also the pro tour where Yam, you guys recognize him because he was the one who attacked the Hazoret.
Yeah.
He was in our team.
That big misplay.
And that was very memorable. Yeah. Because right at that point, we were all like, oh, he's going to win.
Because he drew lethal.
But then he went to his attack step.
Right.
And then, dude, two of our members actually like
started crying. I mean, that was in the finals, right?
That was in the semifinals.
Semifinals.
And then PB went on to win the whole thing because of that game. You know, usually you kind of like have that one key moment, and that's like the, you know.
Yeah, that's a very famous moment in Magic history.
Yeah, so you guys would know that. Yeah, I remember.
I can picture him in my head. I forgot his name. Yeah.
That was insane.
So since then, you've played at a lot of Magic events. You top-aided at GP since then, right?
Yeah, top-aided at Mexico. That was cool. And then, That qualified me for
another
London.
Tour.
Yeah.
Yep.
So PT London was, that was terrible. Oh my God. But then after I went out, there was a GP happening afterwards, right?
Mm-hmm.
So then I guess it was kind of fortunate because I top aided that one.
Wow.
And then, I guess I'm queued for Barcelona now. And I still, I apparently made silver. So I can qualify for the next one too, which I don't know. I don't know when it is.
How much of your success at Magic do you think can be tied to concepts and stuff that you learned in Hearthstone?
Yeah, that's a big question.
But I mean, in a broad sense, do you think that there are some direct lines that, you know, you don't have to get super specific,
But in general, you know, there's a lot of things that card games you can learn from each other, right? It's very easily integrated. So stuff like card advantage, tempo, you know, these concepts of like, you know, how important is life in this situation.
Right.
They kind of, you know, share a correlation, I guess.
Right.
Going into Magic, though, I feel like I'm very well equipped in the concept of tempo because Hearthstone was such a tempo-based game. We talked about how, you know, if you have a 3-4 and your opponent's only holding 3 mana, 3/3s and whatnot, then like, he's so far behind, like he can't catch up because your 3/4 is effectively trading 2/1, right? So I'm a very
well. Your 3/4 blocks all their 3/3s forever.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. But then it's kind of in a standoff too, right? Because in Magic, if you have two bears, so two grizzly bears, and your opponent is a 3/3, none of you guys can attack each other. So there's a standoff. But in Hearthstone, that never happens, right? So I can bring the concept of tempo to Magic, where I just want to never create that situation, right? If my opponent's playing 3-3s, mm-hmm. I never want to be in a spot where, you know, I'm playing 2-2-2s and nothing's happening. Or maybe...
Right, because they just kill your thing and still have something left.
Yeah, yeah. Or yeah. maybe if we're stuck in that situation, I want to put a fly on the table or something right. like that so that I can keep on doing what I want to do.
Right.
Yeah.
And tempo, for those of you that don't know, it's just basically how is the game progressing? Who's the beatdown? Are you attacking? Are you defending? Are you ahead? Are you behind? What can you do to disrupt your opponent's plan and sort of shift the mm-hmm. The tone and like pace of the game in your favor?
Yeah.
And
it's a resource thing too, right? It's,
yeah.
Tempo has a lot to do with like I spend my one mana to negate something you spent three mana on.
Right. Yeah, that's and like that, mana advantage too. Yeah.
Yeah.
But in simple terms, to people who are just starting at card games, I just tell people that tempo is what's on the board.
Right.
Like, mm-hmm. you know, if you have more stuff on the board, you have more tempo. That's right. usually how it goes.
And we talked a lot about cards in Limited yesterday when I was discussing this with you. And you said that tempo is the key to victory because yes. oftentimes you're going to have more commons and fillers than bombs.
Yes.
So you can't rely on the bombs to win you games. You have to rely on this concept of tempo instead. Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. So let's put, like, look in the world of Limited for this one. Mm-hmm. You know, in Sealed especially, if you open a pool that's like, not really bomb heavy, you know, your mythic rares are not as crazy as like Oketra or like any of the gods in the new set, right? Then like, how do you win if you just play a fair game against your opponent who has one, right? You're just gonna keep on trading one for one, and then as soon as they resolve that card, you just lose.
Right.
So the way to win is you tempo, you kind of like curve out against them, and then, you know, like I said, if your opponent's a one life, all your creatures are Oketras.
Right.
Because whatever attack you do in their face, they're dead.
Right.
So getting your opponent as low as possible and you know, with their life total actually has a huge benefit to your cards and your creatures in general. Because mm-hmm. like you get different evaluations, right? Like Lava Axe becomes you win if you're the only opponent with five lives.
Right, right.
Right. So yeah, card evaluations certainly change a lot.
I think we're trained in Magic and in Commander too to like never take card disadvantage.
That's right.
Which I think is a big level of moment for good Magic players is to learn that sometimes card disadvantage is fine.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Like sometimes card disadvantage is to your advantage, and you have to know the spots where, because we get trained like, just never give my opponent a 2-for-1.
That's right. Right. That's right. Right. Yeah.
But sometimes my best chance to win and my best play is actually for me to be okay with this 2-for-1 because it gets me to an advantage somewhere else, like in tempo or something like that.
Yeah. Oh, this brings up a great point because in Hearthstone, I learned that very early on. Winning with like 5 cards and winning with 0 cards is the same thing.
Right. Right. Right?
And if you kind of won with 5 cards, then if those 5 cards were 0 mana, deal 1 damage, like there's a card in Hearthstone called Moonfire, right? Zero mana, deal 1 damage, just a kind of
gut shot is similar.
Yeah, gut shot. Yeah, something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's like that's not a good card. But then if those cards were 0 mana, deal 1 damage, then you would have won that game much easier.
Right.
Right. So even like 2-for-1s, you know, you need to be able to use the cards you draw.
Right,
yeah.
Right. Instead of just holding on to them,
yeah,
just
exactly.
being like, I don't want to attack into that combat trick. There's been a lot of times in Limited where it's like, my only way I'm going to win this, because I know my opponent has a catcher, is to kill them in the air. Mm-hmm. They offer up a flyer, and I'm like, well, I'm going to have to Divine Arrow and block to kill this, because the only way I'm going to win is if they don't play another flyer and they can peck at them in the air.
Yeah, 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 exactly. Like, threat assessment's very important.
Right.
And, you know, in Hearthstone, same thing. If you only have, like, 2 kill spells in your deck, and your opponent has, like, maybe a 6-6 on the board, that's really scary. Maybe you just, like, you know, throw all your creatures into it and maybe take some 6 damage in the face because you know they have a Ragnaros or like an 8-8. Like
a huge
legendary
thing.
Like a huge creature. You need that spell to deal with that.
Right.
You have a bunch of spells that'll deal with the 6-6. They're called the little creatures.
Yeah.
Right? But you don't have anything that'll deal with the big bombs.
Yeah,
so you gotta save it. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Yeah, so play prediction too is something you learn from Hearthstone because you know the other opponent's deck really well and you also know, in Magic for instance, if they have 4 mana, you know they have a 5-drop, you don't necessarily know if they're gonna be able to play next turn, but you know that for effect in Hearthstone because they're going to get 1 mana each turn.
Yeah, I guess tells is very important in any card game, right? Mm-hmm. In Magic, there's I think there's a lot more tells in Magic, right? Because like if your opponent doesn't play a land drop, then oh wow, his hand is loaded, right? And then if your opponent passes an open mana, then you know there's a lot of information you can get from that. Same thing with Hearthstone. If your opponent uses Hero Power, which is the 2 mana thing that you can do every turn, then you probably know that you know he doesn't have a spectacular thing going on. So you know you kind of do like elimination, right?
Process of elimination.
Process of elimination. Yeah, you just go like, okay, he doesn't have that, he doesn't have that. Okay, let's play around that. Let's punish him because he doesn't have an answer to this.
Mm-hmm.
Angie has made it easier than ever to connect with skilled professionals to get all your jobs projects done well.
I absolutely love this because, you know, if you own a home, it can be really hard to maintain. It's hard to find people that can help you for a big project or a small. Well, Whether it's in everyday maintenance and repairs or making dream projects a reality, it can be hard just to know where to start. But now, all you need to do is Angie that and find a skilled local pro who will deliver the quality and expertise you need. Angie has over 20 years of home service experience, and they've combined it with new tools to simplify the whole process. Bring them your project online or with the Angie app, answer a few questions, and Angie can handle the rest from start to finish. Or help you compare quotes from multiple pros and connect instantly, which means you can take care of just about any home project in just a few taps. Because when it comes to getting the most out of your home, you can do this when you Angie that. Download the free Angie mobile app today or visit Angie.com. That's ANGI.com.
All right, well, those are some lessons that we learned from Hearthstone. Let's talk about things that you can learn from Magic. And this is actually a funny story that you told me again last night, right, which is that the rules are very important in Magic. And I think one of the big differences, again, between the two games is that Magic is a far more complex game than Hearthstone is. The barrier for entry to Magic is much higher. And you actually didn't play in GPs or events because you felt like your knowledge of the rules wasn't strong enough for you to participate in them.
Yeah, so my first sanctioned match was in an FNM. It was Magic Origins pre-release, I remember.
Okay.
Because my first card I pulled is with a Gideon Flip Planeswalker, right?
Oh, nice.
Oh my god. Kithian.
Yeah.
I was like, this card sucks. And then all my friends were like, no, it's like 1 mana 2/1, so many abilities. Yeah. Why would you want to play a one shot?
Yeah.
So I remember this very fondly because my first opponent, my first round opponent, when we first started the game, I was like, hey, it's my first game. I don't really know the rules. Kind of go easy on me, right? And it's pretty friendly at first, you know. It's like, okay, sure. And then it was a very close game, and he was about to win. But then I top deck Languish, right? Oh, the -4/-4 the board.
Right, board
one. And then he got so salty. Like, he got visually angry. It's like, maybe, like, I was like, how can the first-time player, like, beat me like this, right?
Right.
So then... This is the.
Who didn't know you would go on to top 8 multiple GPs and play the Pro Tour?
Yeah. But going back for after the Languish.
Now he brags about the story in a different way.
Yeah.
maybe it's another perspective. But he was very angry, visually salty. So on his turn, he drew a card, but then actually drew two cards. So then he was.
And you
saw
it?
Yeah. It was so obvious. I mean, come on. It's so obvious. And then he put them in very close to his chest. Slip one down his thigh, and then resolved Priest of the Forgotten Gods. Or, no, the Priest of the Blood, right? No, 2/2 that makes a 5/5 flying.
Oh, right, okay. Right. The little guy that comes in with the
demon. The five mana. And I was like, okay, I can't beat that, so I lose. So then after that, I told my friends, I was like, hey, this guy's kind of cheating, right?
Right?
And then they were like, oh, you should tell Judge or whatever, right? And I was like, yeah, it's fine, whatever. I'm just kind of playing for fun, I guess.
Right? Mm-hmm.
Like, I didn't really have to deal with that situation at that point. Like, I don't like to, you know, go into conflict as much.
Well, and on a digital game, you would never have to.
We don't have to, like, I've heard about a lot of stories about shuffling stuff.
For the record, everybody out there, if you've never been to a LGS, or even if you have, and anything shady even crosses your mind that's going on, just call the judge.
That's their job. That's why they want to make the experience as fun and, of course, fair for everyone as possible.
Yeah.
But at that point, I was like, you know, kind of a mixture of everything. You know, I was kind of scared, kind of like, don't know what to do. My friends told me this FNM. It's like, doesn't matter. Like, there's no prizes or anything. Like, apparently there was a prize, like PAX or whatever. I was like, okay, if you want to do that for PAX, then you can take my prize. That's fine. So, but then that kind of had a lasting effect because I was like, well, there's a GP coming around, the GP Texas, or it was kind of near Texas. It was the Origins one. And I didn't join because I was scared that because I don't know all the interactions or whatnot, that people can just do whatever they want. And I have to trust
and
them.
Get around.
Right. Yeah. I have to like go like, yo, I don't know. So yeah, I guess you can do whatever.
You just said.
Yeah. So
Just call the judge if you don't know.
So
the judge can be like, yeah, they can do that. Cool.
Yeah.
Like,
but then I also don't want to be like a pain and go like, oh, I'm just going to have to ask for every situation now. So I just practiced more. And then for Battle for Zendikar, which is the next set, then I started actually.
Then you felt comfortable enough with the interactions.
Yeah, because like there's so many interaction points, right? Because like you have to pass priority so much. There's phases, like the Death Touch thing. Like I would never know until that actually happened. Right. So I think looking back, the best way to learn magic is really just to have someone like teach you or like mentor you,
and to play enough that certain situations come up.
Yeah, like play with you.
Yeah,
right.
Because you just have all these questions that just pop out.
It's like, hard to answer. The most random questions. Like, yeah, yeah.
Like as a pro right now, like you would even think that's like a thing. Like, mm-hmm. you know, can I play like two lines a turn?
Right.
Something like that. And there's like, the answer is like, sometimes.
Right? Yeah. Well, it depends. Yeah, you're like, Magic, you only draw 30% of your deck. I'm like, I mean, sometimes. It's funny too, because I would say that you being such a pro, it is very interesting that the rules are tantamount. And playing, mm-hmm. you also said playing on Modo and mm-hmm. playing on MTG Arena is a great way to make sure those lessons are learned. You should also watch our episode on the stack, which Josh crafted up a few episodes back. That's a very good informative episode. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay, another thing about Magic that I found as a very cool point is that cards, you said, are typically worse, especially in Limited. Like
Magic mm-hmm. cards are typically worse than their Hearthstone, like mana
yes.
equivalent.
Okay.
Mana
yeah.
equivalent. And
yeah.
you're talking about what a budget is in terms mm-hmm. of a card. So yeah. in Hearthstone, you said this card has a budget of 6. So a 2-mana 2/2 in Limited is totally acceptable, mm-hmm. but that wouldn't be in Hearthstone. So how do you determine the budget of a card?
Okay. So, going across the whole point is that if you put a Magic deck and face it against a Hearthstone deck, the Hearthstone deck will win. Right?
Yeah,
yeah, because the power level of Hearthstone cards are generally higher. What I mean by budget is that you just look at a creature's stats,
mm-hmm.
you add both the power and toughness up, and then you give a value to whatever effect it has.
Right.
So, for example, Hearthstone, there's a called Knife Juggler. Back then, there was a 2-mana 3/2.
Oh, yeah.
With whenever you another creature enters the battlefield under your control, so whenever you summon another creature, it deals 1 damage to a random target. So I give that
it's
like
a 2-mana 3/2 with a big upside.
With a huge upside.
And that is just a normal card, okay?
That's
just
not even like a great card.
Yeah, that's fine, you know? Like you put it in your deck because
it's good.
That would be pretty good in
4 or 5-mana in Magic. Yeah.
Easily.
Yeah, something like that.
I mean, 5-mana just... There's a card that's 5-mana like, play it, and draw one card.
Yeah,
right?
If it was a rare, it'd be like 2 red-black, and if it was uncommon, it would probably be 3 red-black or 3 black-black
yeah.
or something.
Something
yeah.
crazy like that.
Yeah.
But my point for budget is that Blade Juggler would have like... Or Knife Juggler would have... some.
We have a Blade Juggler.
Yeah, I know, yeah. That's why.
It's a good card.
But that would have a budget of like 6 because 3 plus 2 is 5. The effect that is kind of like 1, so 6, right?
Yeah.
So then usually when I look at a Hearthstone card, it has to kind of have like 6 or more to be a good 2-drop, right?
Mm-hmm.
So
6 or more total power and toughness.
6
to be
or more
good...
total budget.
Oh, yeah, yeah,
like,
yeah.
Or power level, whatever you want to put it, right?
Oh, 3-2
yeah,
plus
yeah.
and the other
yeah,
3-2
plus thing or just a 3-3 yeah. vanilla creature or whatever,
right?
So then looking at Magic cards, it's I use this way to kind of evaluate if a card is good or not, right?
Mm-hmm.
So a 2-mana 2/2 that gains 2 life, right? It's kind of have like a 4.5 because
yeah.
gain life is kind of not really
yeah.
worth it, right?
Right.
So then, and then I was playing Limited at that time in Origins, and most cards tend to have a power level of like 2 times their mana cost.
Yeah.
So generally speaking, Magic cards are kind of like much worse. Right,
mm-hmm.
So like a 3-mana 2/3 flying is like really really good.
Yeah,
right. It's like insane. And of course, it has to have a rider of like it can only block flying creatures. It was a Magic Origin.
Right.
The
so then, but, yeah,
has to have like a downside because it's
yeah,
so
the
good.
Downside because
yeah.
it was so good because flying is worth a lot of budget, right?
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, going from Hearthstone to Magic, I definitely have this kind of concept,
mm-hmm.
and yeah, helps me learn cards. Pick up the cards and know which one's
evaluate
good or not. Really
them
fast.
Better.
Yeah,
is it
yeah,
hard
yeah.
to switch back and forth? Like, if you play Magic a bunch, like, let's say you go to GP mm-hmm. and you played Magic all weekend, then you go sit down at Hearthstone. Do you have to, like, yeah. retune your brain, or is it
yeah.
just...
Yeah, there was definitely a time where I played both games at once.
Yeah.
But, yeah, you kind of don't, because, like, they're just... There's a lot of shared concepts,
mm-hmm.
like we said, like card advantage, tempo, you know, mana cost, whatever. But they're so fundamentally different that it's easy to just switch from one to the other. It's, like, kind of like running and... You know, eating, I guess.
Running,
like,
and some other
right.
physical
yeah,
activity, like
eat,
rowing
yeah,
or something.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Because
right.
when you eat, you don't need to put on shoes. So when you play, parsley, you need to put lands in your deck.
Right.
I see.
Something like that.
And you said this too, which is you learn to treasure cards more highly because the card quality is lower, but you have land draws.
Mm-hmm.
So you have the potential to just not draw anything. So if you have one card in your hand
mm-hmm.
and you know your deck has other cards, that card could be the most important cards in the top like 3 or 4 cards of your deck if the rest of those cards are just lands, right?
Right. So another way to phrase this is in Magic, there are dead draws.
Right.
So in card games in general, they're always dead draws, right? So for example, if it's the beginning of a game, you draw a 10-mana card, you can't cast it in any game, right?
Right.
But Magic has an even more dead draws because
you can just draw lands.
If you don't have enough lands and you draw anything... You
can't
play
it,
right?
Right.
If you have an you know, just a lot of lands and it's late game and you draw another land, then it's a dead draw. Mm-hmm. So in Magic, there are definitely more dead draws.
I see.
Which means that things that you cast, things that you play, like creatures or spells or even anything, right? Like you have planeswalkers or whatever, you need to treasure them more because you're not guaranteed a draw card at the beginning of a turn. Mm-hmm. Whereas every other card game, you are guaranteed a card.
Right, in Magic, yeah. Some percentage of the time, it's
some percentage
it's
you dead. just so lose your card draw.
Yeah,
yeah.
Right, in a sense.
I see.
That's interesting. And how does that manifest itself when you're playing, as far as treasuring the cards?
So you really need to know, like, okay, so small decisions that people think are kind of like trivial. So if I play a 2/2 and your opponent plays a 2/2, and then you just trade it off. People think it's like, oh, that's pretty normal.
Right.
But I think it's like, you need to think about this a little bit more, right?
Right.
Like, right. Especially if the 2/2s have extra effects, right? Because mm-hmm. there's definitely a deck that wants a 2/2 on the field more than the other deck.
Yeah,
right?
Every War of the Spark deck if it would rather have the 2/2 on the field to attack a Planeswalker or protect theirs.
Yep. Right. Exactly. So my point is, there is a 2/2 that's worth more.
Yeah.
And you need to figure it out.
Whether your 2/2 is worth more or theirs.
And if theirs is worth more, then you want to trade it off. Yeah. And then you get a little of edge there, right?
Just a tiny little edge. It's
tiny edges.
Yeah. That reminds me of like Vampire Opportunist, which is a 2/1, but it has an activated ability to make your opponent lose life and you gain life. Yeah. And it's one of those ones I've seen traded away really quickly in the beginning of the game. But it's also like, if your deck doesn't have ways to kill them with just combat, and you need that extra edge, then that 2/1 is actually worth a lot more than their vanilla 2/2, whatever it is that they're playing.
Yeah, and also going back to Hearthstone, this wouldn't even be a choice. Because if your opponent's a 2/2 and you have a 2/2, they'll trade. One person would choose.
Like every
trade.
Time?
Yeah.
Oh, but somebody then, will because they can attack directly.
Because you can choose your attack, right?
Right.
But in Magic, if you have a 3-mana 3/3 in your hand, that's actually very interesting because now you can choose to not trade and play a 3/3 and the 3/3 blanks to 2/2.
Right. And so now you still have a 2/2 and you blank their 2/2.
Exactly.
And so, yeah.
So this interaction is something that doesn't exist in Hearthstone.
Interesting.
Okay. And you also said control in Magic is much better because of counters, but because you get to play 2 turns instead
of
1.
Yes. So when you pass and do nothing, as you know, all blue-white control.
Right. In Hearthstone, that's horrible, right?
In Hearthstone, you can't pass. If you pass your turn, it's a disaster.
Yeah.
Right? Not doing anything.
Right.
That's why the Priest Hero Power is so bad, because it heals for 2, but you're already at full health. So,
so
that's why Priest is kind of like the worst class.
Right.
Yeah, because you can't use it when you've got nothing else to do sometimes.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. You just basically pass your turn, right?
Yeah.
Whereas, like, Paladin will make it 1/1 for 2 mana, which is, like, insane, right? Bonkers. But yeah, going back to what we're saying.
Counter spells.
Exactly, if you pass your turn and hold up your 3 mana for your opponent, then you just kind of like eye on them and see what they do. And if they do nothing, you can play your draw card spell.
Mm-hmm.
If they do something, then it's really scary, then you can counter it. So then they use their mana on their turn and use your mana on their turn and then you get a fresh turn.
It's almost like Vedalken Orrery's power, right?
Well, that is exactly it because it that's what it lets you do.
Yeah. So the fact that you can actually have double the mana in that precise 2 steps, which is your opponent's end step and your upkeep step, that's like playing 2 turns at once.
Yeah, it allows you to sort of skip ahead.
Yeah, and that's so powerful, right? That's the first thing that I kind of like grasped on is like, wow, instants are great.
Instants are great.
Yeah.
And while we did talk about Magic having, in general, like the power level of limited cards and being less exciting, you said that Magic actually can create more exciting cards, where Hearthstone expansions have new legendaries but with limited effects, but Magic's philosophy, some cards can just strictly be better as they go up the rarity chain.
Oh, yeah. I remember, Archangel Avacyn.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Great card.
Jeez, like, That thing has so many.
the one that flips over and like blows everything. Yeah. Like,
okay, it flips and does what now? So Magic is built in a way where these rares and mythic rares can be like 3, 4, even 5 effects stapled onto a creature. Like there's so many effects, which makes it so much more cool, right? But in Hearthstone's philosophy is that because it needs to be easily watchable, because it's a game designed to be watchable on Twitch and tournaments and stuff like that, right? Each creature can only do one thing, right, in Hearthstone. So, throughout, the 7 expansions that Hearthstone has and more than 7 expansions that Magic has, you start to notice a pattern where there's only so many versions of this creature deals damage when it enters play that Hearthstone can do.
Right.
Whereas in Magic, you can have a lot of different things with that, and you can just make your own keywords and stuff like that, right? So Magic in general because of because also of the strictly better cards, right? Mm-hmm. Like a common can actually just be strictly worse than like a mythic rare or whatever, right? This creates kind of like an excitement moment where, wow, I kind of like got this mythic rare out of a booster, or I'm gonna actually put this in and upgrade it from my previous commander cards.
Right. This is just better than this card, so I'll take this out and put that in. Yeah.
Strictly better.
But Hearthstone doesn't have any strictly better cards like that?
Yeah, exactly. Hearthstone's also philosophy is kind of like a free-to-play model in a sense, where, you know, all the cards are kind of like, but there's always a card where it's just better than the other, right? So there's no card that kind of trumps it in a sense. Mm-hmm. Like, for example, like a 2/3 vanilla creature can sometimes be better than a 2/3 of text because it's a beast. And like, there's only certain tribes that matter in Hearthstone.
Right.
It doesn't count everything, right?
I see.
So there's never a strictly better in Hearthstone.
Right. Yeah. And I guess one of the final things to talk about Magic is, one, they've had 25 years to make mistakes and fix them and ban so many cards and learn from them, right? Yeah. And Hearthstone has had a much more smaller amount of time to sort of have that evolution. And I guess the biggest thing about Magic that is probably that leads to the most exciting stuff is that you can splash. You can build different things. You can join as many colors together as you want. You can be as greedy as you want.
Yeah, that's something that doesn't also happen in Hearthstone. I mean, you know, outside of special events, normal Hearthstone games are you pick a class, and then you have the cost cards and you have the neutral cards, like I said before. Mm-hmm. So technically speaking, you're only playing with about 20% of the game's pool, since there's 9 classes, and then there's the neutral, which is another 10%. So you get a 10% there and a 10% there. That's it, right? Whereas in Magic, you can have like a greedy 5. You know, color decks of whatever you want to put in, you know, whatever. I mean, your consistency is going to be a little bit harder to manage.
Yeah.
But at least you have the option. You have the option to go crazy. Right?
Is that ever frustrating to you? Like, because you could see like a hunter card and a priest card and be like, I can make a cool, you know, interaction there, but I can never do that.
I mean, man, imagine if you could, right?
Yeah.
That would be so.
So you've had these thoughts before. Yeah.
I mean, they did special events where they did like dual class arenas before and whatnot, but it's not a staple. Oh, I wish it was. The more options when you are, you know, given to deck build or brew or something like that, the better, right? Like, you just, the world is your oyster in Magic, kind of in the sense. But man, Magic deck building is awesome.
Okay, I'm going to put this one up to the audience here. Try and guess Amaz's 3 favorite colors in order, and then we'll give him 10 seconds, and then you're going to say what it is. Okay. So
Wait, does Josh know?
Well, I mean, I read it on the sheet.
Oh, come on. Yeah.
I knew what number one would be, but I didn't know the other two.
Yeah.
I didn't know I was supposed to look.
He plays Control Priest. All right, you've had enough time, audience.
He plays Control Priest.
He plays Control Priest. Yeah. What do you think his favorite colors are? And they are...
Okay, so blue is just awesome.
Yeah, yeah. Easily.
Like
that's not a surprise. That one I would have guessed.
Yeah, like instants are just mind-boggling. You know? Oh, my God. All right, and my second player is black.
Mm-hmm.
Just like, you know, removal, you know, card draw. That can just actually do anything. Oh, my God.
Yeah,
yeah.
Black,
is that
black,
in the commander
black can
as well?
Do everything. Yes.
Yeah, commander, like black can
you're
just do
actually,
everything.
Right now, you've just, I think, those are considered the top two colors in commander.
Green, black and green.
Black, green, yeah.
Okay.
It's hard to parse because blue is actually probably more represented in the like more competitive commander. But anyway, black is the best singular color.
Yes, singular.
So when it's by itself, because like monocolor, black is the best because like you said, it can do everything. Besides remove enchantments and artifacts. Yeah.
Blue is historically seen as the most powerful just because it's...
Just in all of Magic, yeah.
Yeah, all of Magic, yeah.
Mauro was saying that black can remove enchantments in the future set.
Oh, he said that?
Yeah, he said he...
Oh, I didn't see that, so...
Thank you, Mauro. I need that.
I can just do everything. Just pay some life.
Yeah.
It seems black's doing fine without that, actually, so I don't know that I'm in favor of it. So, and your third... most favorite color? Did we already say it?
It's white.
Esper. So you're an Esper guy.
Esper. I love Esper. And because like it just kind of like encompasses everything. Like you can just do anything you want. And you know, white is flexible. It's kind of boring, you know, if you look at the color just by itself. But I really like white's flicker effects.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So then, you know, blue and black creatures usually have ETBs. So, you know, Esper flicker is kind of my thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And your favorite version of the game to play is limited, right?
Yep. And my favorite Esper archetype is Esper Aggro.
Esper Aggro.
Which is weird because you're like, I'm a control player, but I like Esper Aggro.
Yeah, it's weird because in Hearthstone, I love control a lot because most decks are kind of proactive.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
They kind of like, you answer this or you die, right? In Hearthstone, you do answer this or you die. That's a true statement, right? But in Magic, I like aggro more because more people like control. I like to, you know, establish, you know, early threats on the table and then back that up with counterspell. So if you don't do anything, well, I'm not going to do anything. I'm going to hit you for like three. You know, if you're never going to answer this, you're going to die to the three.
Right.
But if you do, I'm going to have some response.
Right.
So I like establishing threats. And also, like, I really like tempo and magic. Mm-hmm. So I want to do things every single turn.
Mm-hmm. Right. And being able to, again, have that early board presence is very reminiscent of what Frostone is, right?
Yeah, pretty much. Presence. Yeah, you need board presence. Like, I really like that. And that reminds me of the Guild Globe.
Oh, yes. No, we're talking about that. Here we go. You told me yesterday that the best limited cards are not the bombs, but they are the ones.
I actually made a top 10 things I would, you know, tell limited players when they first start. The top 10 advice from, like, Amaz advice.
Right? Amaz advice.
Yeah, and one of them is...
Amaz's tips.
Amaz advice.
Yeah. And one of them is the best cards in limited are not the bombs. Mm-hmm. Are not, like, your Ketras or your Planeswalkers or whatever. Are the cards that you think are good... but other people think are bad.
Interesting.
Yeah.
So now you have to have pretty good card evaluation. You can't just like...
The cards that other people are misevaluating.
Yeah, exactly.
Misevaluating. Yeah, there you go.
So you don't mean best in that you pick those cards first. Those are just the ones that you're going to get later.
Yeah. I mean, no. I mean it by the best as in like, they're going to win you the most games.
Right. Yeah.
Because, you know, the good example is Toll of the Invasion.
Love that
from
card.
War Spark. Yeah, people just think it's like, oh, this is just... Thoughtseize, that's 3 mana. It's like so expensive, right? But then I'm like, well, this is, you know, just 36 Planeswalkers in the set.
Yep.
And then it also amasses. There's like a lot of value here. Mm-hmm. So it is the best card in a sense, in my opinion, on black. I rate it over Spark Harvest, if you have to list all the black commons.
Yeah, that's crazy. Do you rate it over Obnixilus's Cruelty?
No. Yeah, Obnix Cruelty is number one.
is Toll 2 or do you have Lazatip Reaver?
Toll number 2 and then Spark Harvest number 3, right? My point is, if you identify a subset of cards that people tend to not pick as highly, you have so many options, right? So first of all, you can just pick the card yourself if you open it and go like, I'm going to crush some people that are not going to expect this card, right? Because nobody's going to expect Toll. Nobody's going to play around it. And the second very, very important thing, especially in draft, is that you can just pass it and people won't pick it.
Right.
And then it'll come back to you, right? Mm-hmm. So in every single limited set, I always try and look through the spoiler and look through the comments that people will not like, but then I'm like, yeah, this is what I want.
That's the one.
You figure out the cards that, like, they're going to think this is not playable. So I'm going to get 2 or 3 of these that I shouldn't have gotten, basically.
And honestly, that's kind of how you gain an edge, right?
Yeah.
Like, if your opponent's going to open an Aketra, they're going to play it. If you're opening an Aketra, you're going to play it. Right. So, like, where's the edge? Like, is it just, like, opening wars, like pack wars? Whoever opens better wins?
I see.
So this is where you kind of find the extra EV.
Right.
Yeah.
And you think that Tamiyo's Epiphany, it's a 4-mana scry 4 draw 2.
You would
never play more than one in the deck, but you just don't think it's that good.
Yeah, that card is on the opposite of sex spectrum, is that I think that other people think are good, but I don't think it's that good.
Interesting.
Right? I mean, 4 mana for a sorcery draw spell is very expensive.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, sure, it looks like a lot of cards, but I've never played a deck that contains 2 copies before.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Because like, there's just... why do you have so much time to cast your epiphanies, right? What is your opponent doing? Are they sleeping or like, you know, land screwed or something?
I see.
Like, you have to be very fortunate.
Well, if they're land screwed, you don't want to be doing that. You want to be attacking.
Yeah, exactly. Even then, right? But like, I'm just saying that there's not a lot of situations where you go like, I wish I had an epiphany. It's usually more of a control versus control deck, and you want more card advantage because you're like lots of removal spells going on. But generally speaking, yeah, I don't rate that card too highly.
And this is the really controversial one, is you don't think Guild Globe is that good. Now, Guild Globe is a 2-mana artifact. When it enters the battlefield, you draw a card that you can tap a 2-mana to sacrifice and add 2 mana of any color. So it's meant to be...
Any two colors, right.
Yeah. So it's meant to be sort of a mana fixer and also to help you cast maybe some Planeswalkers or things are splashing.
Remember, we're talking about draft here.
Draft here, yeah.
Oh, no, we're not talking about Commander?
No. Because it's horrible on Commander.
Yeah, it's pretty awful.
Because you just play Fel Warstone.
Yeah. Anything that gives you more mana.
Wait, no. Fel Warstone's a draw your card.
Yeah, true. Okay, fair enough. But I'm just saying, like, I'd rather have... You could rather play a Signet, which always go in cubes super fast.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah. We were arguing about this because I think Guild Globe's kind of the best fixer. I would put Paradise Druid above it, but I think it's probably second. But you don't like it at all, which I think is...
Yeah. Because in my mind, it's like a 2-mana draw card. Mm-hmm. And right. You never play. Cantrip. Yeah, you it's 2-mana 0/0 draw card in a sense.
Right.
So like, I don't want to be playing 2-mana 0/0 creatures. Like, if I want to place a card, it has to affect the board.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, there's a lot of situations where you go like, oh well, Gilglow can, you know, help you splash for bombs.
Right.
Doesn't splash for double colored ones, but you know, it can help you get a little bit more consistent that way.
You can have some mono colored bombs because it's two different colors.
Yeah, something like that. Yeah, or you can have another land for somewhere or whatever.
Right.
You can also like maybe activate like the spells matter, the non creature spells matter. Deck, right. Like the
Spellgorger Weirds and the kind of stuff.
But this format, I've never played that card once.
Wow.
See, like, I've had trophy decks, Trophy on Arena, but with like three or four of them.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, I think the format's complex and you can do a lot of
things.
But, you know, I mean, if you open like Enter the God Eternals.
Yeah.
Then I want, and I'm only in black, or I'm only in blue and not black, then I want a couple Gilgubs because I want to play that card.
Okay, so here's a good story, right? Yeah. So we went to the GP Madison, and my friend showed me his pool, right? It was like black-blue, and then I was like, oh, this deck is pretty good. And then there's no Ketra. And it's like near the last, I was like, why are you playing this? And I was like, oh, so Ketra is really good. I need to play this, right?
But that
this
probably makes your deck worse if it's good otherwise.
Yeah. So then he has to play three different color fixers just for Ketra. And it was double white. That's the only white card he had.
Right.
So then after the first day, and I asked him how he did, and it's like, I only got to cast Oketra once, and I lost that game.
Yeah. Ah, because it took too long, right?
Yeah, it took too long.
Yeah.
And then the rest, that's not even counting the rest of the times where it was just stuck in his hand. Mm-hmm. It could have been anything else, right? So
any of those fixers could have been anything else,
yeah,
too.
Exactly. Like, it could be actual playable cards, right? Yeah, you can actually play a 2-mana 2/2 or whatever. Even a land would be better than Gilglob. That's kind of where I put this one now. So, I just think that you have to be very careful when you splash. Like, consistency is very important, especially for like, you know,
limited.
The multiple round format.
Right.
That you have to perform consistently, mm-hmm. right? You don't want to, you know, do many spiky stuff in terms of that.
Right. You had a really interesting strategy too for Modern Masters 2017. Mm-hmm. This is a set that existed with Dinrova Horror, and you picked up very early on that Dimir was the best color because of the blink ability as well, right?
Yeah, because like in that set, well, Signets were in the set too, right? So green was automatically the worst color,
right?
Because you take away the identity of one of the colors.
The thing they're normally the best at, everybody can do now. Yeah,
exactly.
So,
it's like same thing as if there's a new set and every color has a counterspell. Then blue suddenly becomes worse.
Right.
Yeah. So something like that. So it's very easy to identify. And then Dinrova Horror is a common for some reason.
Makes no sense.
And there's also flicker effects in the that's why it was my favorite format. Esper.
Yeah. There you go.
So then I drafted that. It just super easy wins for the first month, and then people start catching on. So then after that, I drafted very, very close to exclusively black red, because that was the way to beat the blue black deck, right? It was have a lot of small creatures out. It was a sacrifice, like aristocrats kind of thing.
Right.
And then to end the game, I would,
Traitor's Instinct, yeah.
Kill,
yeah.
Like, you know, attack everything at you and then sack your guy and then that's it, right? So, yeah, you just kind of have to, like, meta is real.
Yeah.
That's what I'm trying to say.
Like, how many trophies did you win that time around? Trophies are when you 3-0 a draft.
Yeah, that was a lot. That was up to the 70s.
Yeah.
So, that was a really good format.
I would say Maz knows what he's doing when it comes to that.
Format was
we talk about this a lot for Commander, which is because people tend to play in play groups that are kind of the same people, mm-hmm. and they'll play like once a week or, you know, a couple times a month or whatever. And like, we're always saying you've got a meta, you should be adjusting to the meta. And a healthy meta is going to be like, oh, your friend has this deck that's really strong, and you start sort of preloading your deck against it. And then, you know, now you've got more artifact hate because they always go off with a certain artifact or do stuff. And then they go, oh, well, now I have to change my deck so that I can respond to what you did. And I think that's one of the great things about Magic and gaming in general, is that sort of point counterpoint. It's not like a negative. A lot of people will sort of be like, I have this deck and it's awesome. And then my playgroup started playing cards that beat my deck.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what you want to happen.
Great.
That is,
it's
that
called
great.
Strategy.
Yeah. That's what makes it so much fun.
Don't you want to be playing a game where like, hey, I can be smart and I can win. Like,
And I really like your point that saying that once you put Signets in the set, green automatically becomes worse because you're taking away part of its core identity. Mm-hmm. And that can apply to your playgroup as well. If everyone is playing a counterspell less effect, your counterspell-based deck is not going to be as good, right? Mm-hmm. So you should maybe think about how you could adjust to fit that and maybe provide value in ways that other players cannot, because you'll be the only person at the table doing that.
All those cards that say players can only cast their spells during their turns become a lot better, though.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, absolutely.
I know one of those.
Yeah.
But in general, there's always an answer to things. And the answer might not be what you like to play. Like, maybe the answer is Mono Red, but there's always an answer.
Right. All right, let's move into some final thoughts here. Hearthstone, it's not a Brewers format because of the classic set, and you call this like the evergreen problem. And I thought this is interesting because it's kind of similar to what Alpha Unlimited and Beta kind of maybe was for Magic, which is it introduced a bunch of cards that maybe were too powerful or every deck had to play them. And that's sort of what it is in Magic. Or, I mean, in Hearthstone because of the Druid-specific classic set cards from the original set.
Yeah, so I put Druid as the prime example because in the classic set, there were cards that are just insane, right? So there was a Innervate, which is basically Black Lotus for two, right, instead of three. So just slap two mana for the turn. And then you have these hyper-efficient cards like Wrath, Swipe. People with Hearthstone probably know these cards. Like, so my point is when you load up a Druid deck, like when you start building your deck, there's already 20 cards that you would never cut in Druid because they're just so good.
And they can't make better cards than that because then those cards would be way too good. Yeah,
So in a sense, you can only choose between 10 cards in your deck. And that kind of sucks, right? Mm-hmm. Like that's no fun.
Right.
So then, that's the problem of evergreen sets is that, well, yes, the plus side is if a player quits the game for a while and then comes back, well, they go like, okay, well, I'm familiar with these cards. I can kind of get back to the game easier. But at the same time, you take away a lot of, you know, a lot of deck brewing, you know, just possibilities right. and, like, just the creativity of, you know, players.
Mm-hmm. And Magic has sort of, they mitigate this with, like, core sets now. Yeah. They took them away for a little bit, but core sets sort of are that intro for players back in.
Yeah.
You think Hearthstone needs a classic too?
Yeah, that's my solution to the problem. They just need to, like, rebrandish all their classic cards, just make a slightly different version of something like that. And then, you know, people who just joined would be like, oh, this is, like, a worse version of Innervate. I'm okay with that. Like, I can grasp that idea, right? Whereas, like, I don't want to be playing against Sylvanas for, like, the rest of my life, you know?
I see.
That's kind of, like, the breaking point.
Man, Sylvanas... Still, like, yeah. It was good back when I played.
Yeah. Sylvanas is also one of the cards right now, which is in the Hall of Fame.
It's the
ban list. Okay. So now they're actually going back to, like, contradicting the first point where, oh, these cards are very familiar to the new players, and then the new player comes back and is like, wait, why can't I put Sylvanas in my deck? Right? So it's kind of, like, a lot of change that it just happens because you have an evergreen set. It creates more problems than you solve.
I see.
Yeah.
And, sorry, RNG... is something that random number generation, aka drawing off the top of your deck, you don't know what's going to happen. Mm-hmm. It's something that has to exist in card games, otherwise it just sort of becomes chess.
Yep.
And you had a good point about how Magic mitigates this with their lands and that we have multiple kinds of ways to tinker with the mana system.
Yeah, so I was saying that Magic is very creative in the sense that the RNG is something you can tinker with, right? Whereas in Hearthstone, you gain a mana each turn. You don't have a say about it, right? You cannot gain a mana.
Right.
Right? So, man, my favorite
And you can't alter your deck in any way to mess with that system
yeah,
either.
Sure. Yeah. You can't say that, okay, maybe I start with two less cards, but I still have one mana.
Yeah.
That'd be very cool, actually.
Right.
If that's a choice. But in Magic, lands are kind of one of my favorite cards, right? Especially the weird lands, like the utility lands or the man lands or whatnot, because they could go like, okay, well, you can skip your mana for that turn because if a land is just tapped, you're basically skipping your mana.
Right.
But you get like some sort of bonus.
Scrying, right. Or it turns into a creature eventually.
Yeah. Or it just taps for two different colors. Yeah. Like, right. Yeah.
Those are very cool lands because I generally don't like tap. I enter the battlefield tap lands because, like, come on, I'm a tempo player,
right?
Yeah.
So it has to do something spectacular for me to include in the deck.
Like fixing for the colors you need to play.
I've heard of these like five color lands that you guys can play that I'm super jealous when I'm playing with it.
Command Tower is pretty good as it turns out.
Well, that about wraps up, I think, everything. There's so much more to talk about here. I think there's a lot to be learned. And I think, in general, I enjoy playing a lot of card games on computers and, like, sort of those types of games. Hearthstone was a lot of fun for me. You know, Slay the Spire is, in a way, a card game as well. Because I think you can apply a lot of the same ideas and concepts around. So to the listeners, do we have any Hearthstone players out there? Any fans of Amaz? Have you found any lessons that apply to Commander and the other formats that you play from the other card games? And of course, where do you place Magic in the rankings of all the card games of all time? You don't need to answer this.
Yes,
you're talking to the audience,
yeah,
right?
I mean, we clearly
place it on top. Yeah. Where do you place
Number
it?
Number one.
Magic is pretty good. Like, I think that the base set of Hearthstone was like, it's actually insane. I think
just the original when Hearthstone first came out.
No expansions.
Yeah.
Man, that set was so good.
Was part of it because like that was your discovery moment for...
No, that was also the... Yeah, there was a lot of combination of things. But then they weren't scared of power levels, right?
They
the push cards were really pushed.
Yeah, which is why they're still getting played.
Yeah, which is kind of like the same thing as Mythic Rares in Magic, right? But now they kind of like nerfed those.
It's kind of like Alpha, Beta, Unlimited. That's when they had Black Lotus and Moxen and stuff. Like, they would never make that stuff now. Yeah.
Yeah.
But in general, I really like both games because they test like different parts of your brain. And, mm-hmm.
Well, if you want to play card games, not on the computer, but in real life, make sure you use our affiliate link. It's cardkingdom.com/commandzone. You're going to buy cards anyway. Why not use it by just typing in a little bit of extra text when you go to that website? Pretty simple, and it helps support the show and all the content we make here.
That's right. And while you're there, or if you're at your LGS or really anywhere else, you can find a million different online retailers. That's products by Ultra Pro. They have awesome playmats, sleeves, deck boxes. They create the cool wall scrolls that you see in the background. There's the History of Benalia one right there. If you want to spice up your game room or whatever else, Ultra Pro really does make the best stuff.
And now let's move on to the end step where we're talking about something cool outside the world of Magic. And, you know, I was like, we could talk about Hearthstone, but that's...
feels like we just did that.
Yeah,
I think we did cover
so
that.
So I think I would love to hear your thoughts on Auto Chess. It's the game that you're streaming the most these days, right?
Yeah, Auto Chess is great because...
Man, everyone is into that lately.
Yeah. So Auto Chess is an expansion or a fan-made expansion of Dota 2 where they're using pre-existing elements in the game to essentially make a chess game where you're buying... heroes and champions, and you're adding them to the board. You're leveling them up, and you're fighting against other opponents on like eight other opponents. Like you're drafting essentially from a pool. Right?
Yeah, you would know about it.
Yeah, I love Auto Chess.
It's funny because that's where Dota came from, right? Originally, it was a modification to Warcraft 3. Yeah.
Games within games.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy.
It's the best. Yeah.
Anyway, talk about Auto Chess.
Yeah, what do you love about it?
Yeah, so Auto Chess is honestly just a card game, right? Like you have units and whatnot. It's a card game. It's like guys know Dominion kind of. Yeah. So it's very much like that, a deck building game while the game is happening.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, sure. Sometimes you don't get lucky and get the right cards at the start, so that you pay some life for it, right? You kind of use life as a resource to try and buy time, and then you want to get the right amount of synergy. And, draft the right cards, look at what other people are doing, counter their strategies. And also, it's a shared pool, right? So if a lot of people are going your strategy, like mages or whatever, then you want to try and not do
switch
that.
Switch to something else.
Yeah, because then all the mages kind of just die together, right? Because they're sharing the card pool so much.
They dilute their power level.
They just all kind of die at the same time. So it's just a bunch of fun. Because, it's not each round. You get, like, five different characters, right?
Choices, right.
So... Slot machine!
What's the best character? What are you hoping for?
What's the best character? So...
Like, what's one that you'll pick every time if you can?
Oh, man. There's too many. Okay, so how it works is that early game, you only get the one cost stuff. So $1 stuff. But then as you level, you get, like, the five cost stuff.
What's the best five cost one?
The best five cost one?
Kunkka?
Kunkka's a four cost.
Oh.
Oh, come on, Jimmy. I thought you were on top of this.
I've only won one game of Auto Chess ever.
Oh, well, that's actually pretty good.
Thanks. I felt very good about it.
It's pretty good that he won one.
It's hard, dude. Oh my gosh. Towards the end
round.
That's true. Well, we're used to Commander, so we should be used to that.
Yeah.
You can't make political deals probably, though.
Yeah, probably not.
No, you can't. You can just spam chat, no scroll across screen.
No one will respond. Yeah.
Even worse.
But my favorite unit in that game is Terrorblade.
Terrorblade.
So he does no damage, but then once he gets like five attacks in,
he just
turns into the demon and it's the hardest hitting character in the whole game, right? It just kills everybody. So you want to draft a team where, you know, you have a lot of tanks, they get distracted, TB gets his attacks in, and then go boom.
And he becomes big demon monster.
That sounds fun.
Well, Maz, if people want to watch you online or follow you on Twitter or wherever else, where should they find you?
My Twitch is Amaz.
A-M-A-Z.
Yeah. My Twitter is Amaz.
A-M-A-Z.
My YouTube is not Amaz. It's Amaz HS.
Amaz High School. Interesting.
Hey, I heard of this high school that where you
play video games.
High school. Yeah.
Oh man. Yeah.
Maybe Michi HS and Amaz HS can join forces.
That was a good show. That was great. I mean, Command Zone is pretty good, dude. That episode. I told them before, like the episode, my favorite episode,
with Jacob
and Ashlyn. Yeah. You guys need to watch that one. It's so
turns
good.
Out Amaz watches a lot of Game Nights because, yeah, you're like quoting moments to me. And I'm like, I think that's from this episode. Yeah. You're like, yeah, it is.
No, it's good. Yeah. That was like really good. The Falcon Ori guy. Yeah. You Falcon know, Ori guy. Land Screw guy.
That's right.
Yeah, I know about this.
You're a real fan of Amaz. We appreciate you a lot.
Make sure you check out our sister podcast, The Masters of Modern. Alex Kessler, Ben Bateman, they talk about the modern format and all things competitive Magic. You can find them on Twitter at the MMcast, or you can find them on YouTube. Just type in Masters of Modern. They do videos now. They'll pop right up.
Yeah, if you need to prepare for a modern Pro Tour, you should check them out.
Yeah.
Ooh. Yeah, I do need to do that. Yeah.
You have Lee Shi Tian, though, so I think you're good. I think you're good. Alex and Ben are great. Don't get me wrong, but
Lee Shi Tian for everybody.
Lee Shi Tian, we told everyone can message you. Our editors for the show, Ashlyn Rose, Josh Murphy, and Jared Lafreniere. Thank you all. And of course, special thanks to Jeffrey Palmer for doing the awesome animated backgrounds that are behind us on set, as well as open and end our podcast on the show. You can find him at Living Cards MTG on Twitter. Amaz, thank you so much for coming by. It was pleasure having you.
It was a ton of fun, man.
Yeah.
All right. Make sure you guys follow Amaz. Make sure you tune in next week for another episode of the Command Zone Podcast. Until then, we'll see you next time.
Peace.
Thank you for your attention. For further inquiries, send an email to commandcast@rocketjump.com or ask us on Twitter at JF Wong and at Josh Lee Kwai. See you later, alligator.
Greetings, humans.